Greetings, friends. It's me, Duncan, and this is the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, and I welcome you to the sweet shores of this audio podcast. Yeah, sure, we don't have video yet, like some of the fancy pants out there. I don't have a neon sign behind me. I don't have a potted plant behind me. I don't have some perfect set, 4K cameras filming my beautiful body, always naked. I haven't worn clothes in 5 years. But what I do have is a deep, resonant, powerful voice that often gets compared with some of the great world leaders of our time. And I'm lucky that I have that. I'm grateful that I have that. But most importantly, I think I have to reveal the reason my voice sounds like this. The reason my voice was described by Time Magazine as the archetype for positive masculinity. Baritone, yet sweet, booming like thunder, yet soft as a flower, is not just because of my incredible genetics, not just because of the fact that I was actually created in a government program, which is now not funded anymore, unfortunately. It was a really real pain in the ass for me because I can't get any of my cocaine gel that they used to give me when I woke up. But the real reason that my voice is like this is because of Ozempic. I've been using big fat turkey baster blasts of Ozempic. A lot of people take Ozempic in lots of ways. My method is I mix it in with my own blood, and this is going to sound disgusting if you don't know the science behind it, some of my excrement, throw in some Ozempic, and then I take a turkey baster and I shove it all the way down into my throat and spray it on the walls of my throat until I can feel this kind of caulk-like coating that crusts over my larynx, vocal cords, and pretty much anything in my throat. I try to get it all. Then I take a blow dryer and I shove that in my mouth and I blow dry the Ozempic mixture. And this hardens it up, and that's how I get my voice. You know, it feels good to get that off my chest because I felt guilty about it. You know, I've lied in past interviews that I've done. You can read it, I'm ashamed to say. Read Voice Weekly, the newsletter for, it's like Playboy for voices. And in my interview, I just didn't admit the real reason that you're getting this thing that you're hearing here. I said that the reason that my voice was like this is because I did vocal exercises. I left out the Ozempic part. I left out the baster. I left out the blow dryer. Now you know, I don't blame you if you leave this podcast. I don't blame you for giving up on me. But the feeling of relief surging through my body right now as I speak through my freshly Ozempic caulked throat is something I haven't felt for a very long time. They say the truth hurts, but you know what hurts more than the truth? Shoving a blow dryer in your mouth and getting the settings wrong. Because if you have the thing on high and it can't happen early in the morning, you're groggy, you don't have your cocaine gels, you just can really scald the back of your throat. But even worse than that is lying. Lying hurts more than the truth. Because at least when you tell the truth, you get it over with. The demon comes out. It's done. But when you lie, you're just extending the pain. That's all you're doing. You're just stretching out the pain. Some people do it for years. I know, I'm not going to call them out. I know lots of people who are in the vocal Ozempic closet. I know lots of people who feel like if they admit that the reason that they have the beautiful voices they have is because of a chemical mixture, they will be rejected by society, thrown out of their universities. I mean, to put it plainly, canceled. But any of them who may be listening, I want to invite you to really think a little bit about how you feel every day. Now that I'm freshly confessed, I can't even explain it to you. Colors are brighter. That gargoyle fucking thing with the big fat pop belly and the weird dangling ears with stupid ruby glowing ear rings it wore that used to sit directly in front of me wherever I was and just roll its eyes at me, it's gone. It disappeared. A puff of smoke, sulfuric smoke. You're out there right now. I get it. You got your life. You've got your riches. You've got your fame. But you know, you don't have the truth. You don't have the truth. You don't have the satisfaction of knowing that the person the world thinks you are is who you actually are. And most importantly, you're not leading people down a bad path. Because so many people, and I'm guilty of this, so many people, I know they probably took the Lex Tarrington Vocal Exercise Academy classes that I said gave me this voice, instead of just going straight to the baster. I'm so sorry to you. I know it's the classes are expensive. He's in jail now. He deserves to be in jail. I won't go into any details about it. I still consider him a friend, but it was fucking horrible what he did. The moment you just come to terms with it, everything gets better. The truth that sometimes inside your chest, it feels like there's a bubble of killer bees swarming around. Sometimes you wake up with a headache, tight shoulders, thinking about somebody who did you wrong 10 years ago. Sometimes you look out at the world, you don't see color, you don't see the beauty. You might even be sitting on your porch watching the sunrise with two strange dogs humping each other under the shadow of your oak tree. And instead of enjoying that, instead of being able to tune into that moment of pure primordial beauty, you're worrying about something that happened 3 months ago or something that might happen at some point in the future. Think about that. They say that the reason on either side of Jesus during the crucifixion there were thieves is because it's a symbol that represents the past and the future. Thieves. They steal away the present moment. When I was a kid, we just enjoyed strange humping dogs at sunrise. There was no thought of finances, bills, deals, contracts, negotiations, impending apocalypse, AI invasions from the hollow earth. There was just you, the sunrise, and the dogs. All of you completely connected in that moment of pure, unbridled bliss. But then, as time progresses, you begin to invent an alternate reality for yourself, the thing we call the future. Or you invent an alternate reality for yourself, the thing we call the past. Non-existent, a fantasy. Something that you're probably mostly wrong about anyway. I mean, let's face it. Remember all those keg stands you did, bro? Remember? Remember that time you were with Derek and you thought you could drop in on the half pipe? But you weren't ready, and everybody told you you should wear a helmet. But you dropped in, and you hit your head on the half pipe so hard it made blood come out your nose. Remember that? Remember how, like, you felt in that moment right before you went unconscious and woke up 5 years later in a military research program? You can't remember, can you? You can't remember any of it. You don't remember the training. You don't remember that we sent you through a time portal to battle aliens. And if you can't remember that, why do you think the memories that you have are accurate. I'm just saying, probably your brain isn't working as well as you think it is, which means that your ideas about what's happening in the future or what happened in the past are probably wrong. I mean, think about what happens when you drop your iPhone on concrete, especially the early versions. And I'll tell you, the human brain is like the earliest iPhone available. Like, it's first gen. So you smash that thing into the half pipe. And dude, don't you remember? We were all doing inhalants that summer. Remember? You're the one who got us into it. So I'm just saying, the odds are pretty good that you don't even remember what happened in the past correctly. And if you can't really remember what happened in the past correctly, how the fuck can you predict the future? So you've just invented some kind of simulated, mushy, low-grade, low-res, pixelated matrix that you're crucifying yourself on. And that's why you can't enjoy those moments, those tiny, beautiful moments, sitting there in your backyard, drinking your chamomile tea, naked, knowing as soon as the sun gets high enough in the sky, you're going to lean back in your chair, spread your legs out, and let the sun blast your taint. But instead of enjoying that feeling, instead of enjoying the feeling of the sun blasting your taint, sending those sweet photons deep inside of your inner folds, you're thinking about a bill you need to pay in a couple of weeks. You're thinking about Laura, who everyone told you was bad for you. You didn't listen to us. You're thinking about Laura. Like, yeah, she cheated on you, dude. We told you she would. She cheated on Zeke. She cheated on Carol. She cheated on, what's that kid's name? Vanson? The kid who ended up in the mental hospital? And then directly after she cheated on Vanson, you get into like a monogamous relationship with her and you think you're safe. It's over now, bro. It's gone. I mean, I hate to break it to you this way through the podcast, but she's hooking up with Bruce now. I mean, this is human existence. This is human incarnation. We have so many things happening around us. So many things that we'll never see. You'll never see her at Bruce's house. You'll never see her in that stupid robe he would always offer people he was dating. Property of Bruce on the back. But you know it's probably happening. And yet, if you withdraw your senses from that reality and just enjoy this moment, the rising sun, the humping dogs, the fact that in 10 minutes, you're going to be roasting that taint with photons from the sun. And suddenly everything gets instantaneously better. Nothing in the world is wrong. Everything's perfect. And if you can even embrace the reality that probably as you are relaxing into your morning taint sun bath session, she's waking up next to Bruce, giving him big, fat, sticky morning kisses. She had great lips, man. But if you can embrace that too, if you can let it all in, stop fighting the truth, just enjoy the wash of warmth against your undergun, then I think you will experience the transcendent reality that all the mystics pointed us towards. You will experience the ultimate rebellion against late-stage capitalism, which wants you to be scared, wants you to be freaked out, wants you to be ruminating, wants you to be in a froth of anxiety. Because if you're in a froth of anxiety, if you're lost in your head, thinking what you know about Bruce, he loves getting his ass eaten, putting two and two together. Then you're going to develop a lot of diseases. You're going to get sick. You're going to get hypertension. You're going to get shepherd's paunch. You're going to get dandelion nips. All this stuff. And then what are you going to need? You're going to need medication. And where are you going to get the medication from? You're going to get it from Big Pharma, man. And then you get it. There's an actual profit to be gained from working every single taint bathing man and woman in this planet into a anxiety froth. And so if you can tune back into the present moment, ignore those two thieves on either side of you, ignore the reality of what's happening with Bruce and your girl, not ignore, embrace, I should say. Accept it as just part of the big picture. And not only will you once again experience the Garden of Eden situation that you have confused with your childhood, not only will you experience the kind of bliss and joy and delight that you used to experience as a child, not only will you experience day three of vacation, that feeling you get on day three of a great vacation without going anywhere, you will shake loose the dark manacles of capitalism. You will shake loose the phantasmal chains that have kept you locked to an imaginary universe of useless fear. You will rise up again and enjoy the glorious morning that one experiences when they allow the sun into their taint and scrotum, vagina. Let us come together, let us be as one, bathing our taints in the soft summer sun. The world is yours, everything's for you, so put your legs into the stirrups, let the sun come through. You will see the light through your brown eye. You'll release the darkness and let your spirit flow. Shame is the taint, truth is the sun, put them both together and watch the doggies hump. Shame is the taint, truth is the sun, put them both together and you will have more fun. You will see the light through your eyes. You'll release the darkness, let your spirit fly. We have a wonderful podcast for you today. Jeremy Corbell is here with us. Now, if you are remotely interested in the current events related to UFOs, then this is for you. If you have actually tuned in to the bizarre reality that the U.S. government has been holding hearings on these UAPs, UFOs, whatever you want to call them, not just holding hearings, but in a very low-grade, very government speak style way, seemingly admitting that these things are out there and they're not really quite sure what the fuck they are. And you are going to love this podcast. Jeremy Corbell has an excellent podcast of his own. He does with George Knapp called Weaponized. He's been at the forefront of whatever you want to call the current situation when it comes to UFOs, disclosure, whatever you want to call it. He's actually responsible for getting some of the footage that we have seen of these Tic Tacs, these UAPs, to the media. He's been on every big news show talking about UAPs. And now we are lucky enough to have him on the DTFH. Everybody, welcome Jeremy Corbell. Mr. Corbell, welcome back to the DTFH. As always, I look forward to these conversations with you. Not only are you one of my favorite people in the world, but the work you are doing is work that I am so interested in, and you are really leading the charge in a lot of this. So I, just to start off, can you get all of us up to date on where we are right now with the UAP phenomena and the federal government's seeming, quote, disclosure of the reality of whatever these things may be?
Yeah, man, this is a really weird time for the topic. This used to be so subculture, and you get, you know, reports and little videos off of people's, you know, beta cams, and then, you know, we get the iPhones and more people are talking about it. Now military people are talking about it. They have acknowledged that they've spent $22 million on a UFO program before we were told that there was no interest, nothing to see here, move on. We stopped studying UFOs in 1969.
Yeah.
We come to find out that's a lie. So all of a sudden, here we are in 2023. Let me just backtrack from that a little bit. I'm assuming people understand that there's been so much coming out about UFOs since 2017 in relation to our government. That's kind of the new thing. UFOs have been here with everybody. Yes. They've been reporting it consistently. The shift we've seen is this engagement, yes, in politics and our government and kind of this ominous threat. Hey, we don't know who's building these, who's operating them, who's piloting them. That's the real headline. And by the way, we've been studying them secretly with millions of dollars, even though we've told everybody to mock you if you're interested in UFOs, to dismiss it. There's this creation, yes, of stigma that's occurred. So that's really the difference now, is this engagement and this public facing, hey, we got to admit it, that this is real. So for me, it's pretty surreal because this was all underground for a long time. This is never something that was so big. Right. So here's what I noticed. What I noticed is that we've gotten to a point where the denials no longer are working. Whistleblowers are coming forward. They're saying, I worked in government, right, programs about this. We have pilots that are filming these things, and they're being picked up not only by radar, but by thermal imagery, so actual video. And the systems we have now in our fighter planes and our basic national defense are these integrated systems where it's not just one plane tracking it or one pilot seeing it, not one radar. It's being spread out through this. It is an artificial intelligence. It's being spread out and showing that all of these different devices are picking up these craft of unknown origin, which are capable of things that we have yet to achieve in our own aeronautics and aerospace. So I think we're at a point where, look, Senate and Congress, and they're made up of people, and they're interested too. But from a national defense standpoint and a military, right, standpoint, anything that is operating in our skies with impunity and restricted airspace, and they're not ours, we need to identify whose they are. So the problem became very simple once we acknowledged this, in that let's find out what UFOs represent. Who made them? Who operate them? What's the intent? Who's piloting them?
Right.
So where we are, because you asked, so here's the rant, you know. I think what we're seeing with all the engagement right now, which I'll tell you more specifically about with Congress and what's going on if you want.
Right.
But I think UFOs has now captured, we've been given the permission to allow UFOs and what they represent to us to capture the imagination of the population of planet Earth. I mean, before, it was stigmatized to the point where people didn't want to report what they saw, and now people are being encouraged to report. So it's not so wacky to talk about it. And I think that's what we're seeing on a fundamental level, is we're being given permission to have this discussion.
Okay, can you clarify something for me? This is my understanding. The idea is the government figured out a way to, through like a weird, stupid loophole, to get around having to admit that they have UFO wreckage. And so they ended up putting a bunch of whatever this stuff they've recovered is, they've recovered into private companies like Lockheed Martin, wherever, who knows wherever. And so because of this, they don't have to say, yes, we have wreckage, because they don't. A private contractor has the wreckage. The whistleblower program has made it so that if you work at Lockheed Martin and you've been roasting marshmallows over alien wreckage, getting increasingly pissed off as a scientist, realizing that the world deserves to know about this, you can now go to the U.S. government, tell them what you know, and they will grant you immunity. Is that correct? Is that the genius way that certain people in the U.S. government have found to like bring people out of the woodwork?
Yeah, you just jumped right into the deep end with kind of what is currently happening right now, what we're seeing in the whistleblower legislation relating to UFOs. Why that legislation was put into place is really important before we talk about what that legislation says. Why it was put into place is because behind the scenes, people were coming forward. They were saying, we have a story to tell, but we're bound by our NDAs. We've worked on non-terrestrial technologies. We have direct experience, reverse engineering technology that is claimed to not be from here. And then, of course, all the public reports and all of the stuff that we've learned that there's UFO studies being done by our government. So Congress said, and Senate said, we're going to make this a safe place. This is important. If this is true, then these people cannot have reprisals against them for coming forward. They cannot be held to their NDAs for working on these programs 30 years, 35 years of secrecy. We need to know now, because they're a craft now, and right, we're having near misses with our pilots. That's where it came from. The genesis of this legislation came from the concerns of our service members who were encountering UFOs, that were seeing them, that were filming them. Now, what does the legislation say? That's what's really interesting. You are right. It is very clear. It says that even if you signed an NDA and you're told by the, let's say by the CIA, you can't talk about this reverse engineering program. The legislation says, oh, yes, you can. And in fact, you must. And there are no reprisals. Nothing can be done against you. And additionally, there's penalties if anybody tries to put reprisals on you. So now, you are also right that the way our government has handled these unidentifieds when we get into wreckage, right? We'll call it wreckage for now, but when we get into actual hardware, material, mechanics, machines, full craft, full UFOs of unknown origin, what they would do is they would sequester that technology into a special access program, or even an unacknowledged SAP, special access program. And they'd say, okay, Lockheed Martin, we're gonna have you study this, but it's gonna be very siloed and compartmentalized. Nobody's gonna have the full picture, but you're gonna try to reverse engineer these to exploit the technology and create derivative technologies. They know we can't build a full what we call UFOs. They propel in a way that is completely different than our reactionary propulsion systems like rockets. Right. But we can exploit that technology, try to get derivative technologies and figure it out. So Lockheed's like, great. They got one of many companies that has one of these secret programs. But over the decades, and they did this originally back from 1947, because look, that was logical. At the time, we're like, whose are these? If anybody reverse engineers this tech, they're going to have a huge advantage in war. So I understand the purpose of the secrecy to begin with. The issue is that the cat's out of the bag. The public has been told now that there are machines that we don't know where they're from. So now the law says that employees of Lockheed or even officials that have been running these programs without oversight from Congress, proper oversight, you can and must, is the way I read it, must come forward and talk about it. That's still a heavy lift, but people are testifying. I have spoken with a dozen.
Is there a penalty for not, I'm sorry to cut you off, is there a penalty for not coming forward? Is there a legal repercussion if these people don't come forward?
No, I think that would be highly aggressive. I think a lot of people want to come forward with what they've seen or experienced. And in fact, they are coming forward and they're talking to Arrow, is the name of the organization now, the UFO program within the United States, to kind of do these investigations and receive the reporting. So there's no penalties if you don't come forward, but it is a duty for people to come forward because they're talking about illegal programs that these companies, let's say, that aren't reporting properly to Congress. So people are coming forward. Right. I know a number of the people have already testified and people that are going to.
How many people so far have come forward?
24. About.
What?
Yeah.
24 Bob Lazars. Basically, now we have 24 people who are coming forward with information about these programs. So this is, I think you are more way deeper in it than I am. So when I hear that, I can barely wrap my head around it, that we have gone from rumors, whispers of, what do they call it, black skunk works, the rumors, whispers of like, programs that even U.S. presidents can't get access to. You hear it, you want to believe it, but it sounds like bullshit. And now, verifiably, 24 people. Are they all from Lockheed Martin or just various companies?
So let's qualify that. So that number was given, about two dozen, was given by the head of Arrow, Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, when he did a public UFO hearing to Senate, where they were checking in with him. Do you have the authority and the funding you need? Was basically what they were asking. Turns out he's got the funding, but not the authority. So there's certain types of authorities you need in order to get this information. But he did reveal that he had about two dozen individuals come to officially testify to Arrow. And the thing with that is, you say like 24 Bob Lazars. I don't think so. I think that there's a variety of kind of exposure to these programs of these people that have come forward to Arrow. Because I know about some people that just looked in a door, that just saw some of it. Then I know some people that monitored as what they call a red hat, which is somebody that monitors to try to make sure there's no leaks in the program. So there's a lot of different types of, I don't know, you call them whistleblowers, but people that have had certain exposures to these programs. Because understand, Duncan, this is something it took a while for me to really understand. The UFO subject, some people think, oh, it's fun, it's fanciful. It is classified at the highest level of our national security, above the hydrogen bomb, above the atomic programs. So the UFO subject has been so compartmentalized and sequestered over to private industry that they feel like they've lost control. That is the truth. Wow. So not many people have like a big picture understanding of what we're dealing with. You get people that are admirals or generals and they've seen these unidentifieds, and sometimes they just cover it up because they want to go out onto a mission. So when we're talking about actual reverse engineering, like Bob Lazar talked about, now again, whether people believe Bob Lazar or not, at this point is irrelevant. We have so much more information that we do have these exploitation programs. If Bob Lazar is telling the truth, which I believe, and I've cause to believe, and if he worked on those programs, great. There's one program with 9 discs, but there were others. There are others. So I'll tell you this. I know for a fact that our intelligence agencies are considering this UFO puzzle on the level of weapons of mass destruction, meaning they know that these technologies, when they produce the propulsion, that the repercussions of having that in the wrong hands could be devastating when it comes to our planet. And that's why they classify it at the level of weapons of mass destruction.
What's devastating? I mean, my understanding is this is some kind of anti-grav, time-space bending. I don't know what time-space bending truly would be, but some method of producing like gravity wherever you want it. How is this dangerous other than like allowing, enemies of the United States to have ships that would be infinitely faster than ours? Or is that the specific danger? Or can these things be converted into weapons or some other nefarious, horrible thing?
Yeah, so that's the issue. It's like, you know, you can build a knife and you can use it to like cut food off a tree and feed it to somebody, or you can stab somebody, right? So here's the theory or the understanding. Of course, if there are craft that could penetrate certain areas on the globe and deliver weapons because they're faster, well, that's a threat for sure. But it actually goes much deeper than that into the propulsion systems themselves. So if this is true, if all the evidence shows us that these are gravity propelled, if UFOs, as we know them in terminology, if these craft, if they propel using some sort of gravitational distortion, that's the ultimate weapon. And let me explain that. Now, again, whether you believe Bob Lazar or not, because that's not important to me, there were a number of programs that Bob did talk about. And he talked about Project Galileo, which was the power and propulsion of the craft. Like, it used gravity wave amplification with an element 115. That's what he said, or that's what was told to him, and he witnessed some of that. But he also said there was a program called Project Sidekick. And that program was specifically to look at the weaponization effects of gravity lensing or harnessing gravitational waves.
Whoa.
So if these craft do work in the way that we witness, because with our eyes, with our cameras, we can see they make right angle turns at 20,000 miles an hour. Most things would just explode or turn into jelly the second that you make a movement like that because of inertia. But these craft seem to be void of inertia. So what happens there is, if they are using gravity to do that, then gravity can be weaponized. Anytime you can produce gravity, it would be the ultimate weapon. So that is the real fear from how I understand it at this time.
Right. Like, okay. So again, not really understanding what this stuff is, but theoretically, if you could amplify gravity where there are enemy combatants and suddenly make the gravity there infinitely more than planet Earth, they would destroy them. They would smash them. They wouldn't be able to hold their guns. They would be turned into putty, right? That's the idea. You could just shift gravity wherever you want to shift it, destroy whole cities, collapse everything without any kind of radiation or some, wow. That is so scary.
Yeah, imploding or exploding. And there's probably a lot of scientific reasons why, you know, put a black hole right in Baghdad. I mean, I don't know. But I do understand that the actual propulsion system itself if they are what our military thinks they are, what our Defense Department thinks it is, then that technology could be easily weaponized. And so that is the reason why it's taken on this level of weapons of mass destruction.
And this, hearing that makes me feel a little less bitter about the people hiding this shit from us. Because the last thing you would want is somebody else to have a gravity bomb. Like, right. That is a disaster. And maybe they've just been kicking the can down the road because they have the model of the atom bomb. They saw what happened. You know, it's like, what it's not like it's always going to stay in the box. Inevitably, once people realize this is possible, they will figure out how to do it. And then you just have another even more horrific world-destroying technology that not only we have, but other people have. So I get, now it makes sense. Like, it's not like they're like, we don't want you to know there's other there's life out there. We don't want you to know there's aliens. We're worried you won't be able to handle the cultural shock of suddenly not being alone in the universe. We don't want Russia to be able to turn gravity up in New York so that it has the same gravity as some massive planet smashing everybody instantaneously. That's it.
If I'm getting it right from how I understand it from the people that are involved in this, is that is an aspect of it, like one aspect of it, that we're not only trying to figure out, you know, how dangerous this technology could be in the wrong hands. And of course, this was during the time of the Cold War. This is during a time of major problems, you know, on our globe when these efforts first started, I'd say probably 1945, 1947. But also just think about it as derivative technologies. To have a technological advantage, like any nation that has a technological advantage, right. I mean, they win, man. And so I do understand that element of the secrecy. Now, people like Lazar and other people that I have spoken with in these programs, they would say, look, why don't we just tell, it's not our job to hide this. So why don't we just tell people, look, there are UFOs and we don't know where they're from. They may represent, you know, some sort of external contact with Earth, but we don't really know. Like, what is a UFO? Like, we were talking when you were on my show Weaponized, we were talking about how some gurus would see these orbs. So the whole thing is UFOs, you know, they manifest in so many forms. The question is, if we don't understand it, if we don't, especially the technology aspect, because there is an element of technology to the UFO issue. And it's like, if we don't understand that, then we don't know what we're dealing with. Let's take us back to 2019. In 2019, off the West Coast, very now famous UFO swarms went around 10 of our Navy warships. Now, people have tried to say these were Russian drones or Chinese drones. They've tried to say these false things. But I know from people in our government and also from public statements, we haven't identified these. So the question becomes, okay, what is that about? What is this performance about where they know the position of all 10 of these warships simultaneously? And for 3 nights, they swarm these things. They're transmedium. They can go into the water. They can come back out. One of the witnesses I spoke with saw one of these objects over the USS Russell instantaneously shoot up into what he said, space. It was instantaneous movement. So these technologies, from a defense standpoint, I get it. They want to find out what's up with UFOs.
Yeah, sure. Of course. Yeah, I mean, the general sort of cliche idea of whoever the dark forces are in the U.S. government trying to suppress this information is that they are sort of anti-life. They're so fucked up that they wouldn't want to share this information with people. But yeah, I get it. It's like the risk involved and there is no way for them to say, yes, there are aliens, or yes, there are UFOs, or yes, this phenomena that's been recorded since people have been writing on papyrus or stone is real. We have quantifiable evidence that it's real. it's that just saying that instantly leads to, okay, let's make one ourselves. Let's make one of these ships. Let's bring this technology to planet Earth, use it for cars, use it for everything, free fucking energy. And they're like, yeah, also you can use it to cause earthquakes. Do you want that everywhere? I mean, if you have some ability to fuck with gravity, imagine putting that thing in a fault line, an undetectable earthquake creation machine. That's disastrous. Do you think it'll never come out, Jeremy? You think this stuff is so potentially catastrophic if it gets in the wrong hands that they will forever keep it out of sight?
Yeah, I don't know that that's a choice anymore. And I do see, so first of all, everybody in the government that I have spoken with or I talk with, the government is filled with people, and most of those people yeah. are really good people. They're nice, right. and they're good, and they're just, and they're righteous. So I don't have this looming idea like there's this hidden hand from the government trying to keep everybody asleep to this thing. I don't see that. What I see is a bunch of curious people who have not been properly informed. And in fact, journalists like myself right. get better briefings than Senate or Congress. And that's a problem, right? So
right.
I don't think we can reverse and go back anymore. I think we're at a point where
right.
the American public at least is saying, hey, we're seeing these now more often because our sensors are better, and also because there appears to be an increased frequency. I think the issue becomes, once you say definitively, once you say, okay, UFOs are machines from somewhere else, meaning not from planet Earth, not made here on Earth. The second you do that, and that's like, first of all, who's going to say that? Because the follow-up questions are going right. to be too hard to answer. Okay. How long has this been secret? Who's been lying? Where's this information gone? Where's the technology right. gone? Let me ask you this. Does that mean that the people that have had close encounters and have gotten radiation sickness or burns on them, some people have died from close proximity to UFOs. That's something that was well detailed by one of the UFO programs. They did biological studies on people durationally, and people died from exposure. So the question becomes, are abductions real? Like, if you can't control right. the airspace, right? And you're telling me UFOs are real. And let's say in the 60s, I had a big craft land by me and my family, and I had an abduction experience, like Travis Walton had an abduction experience. It's like—
You had one?
No, not me. I'm giving a theoretical, oh. if somebody had one,
okay, gotcha.
Not that I remember, Duncan. I mean, you did take me out one night in LA.
I abducted you.
I bet. It was the greatest night of my life.
It was wonderful. Don't worry.
It was so great.
It was wonderful.
I'll never tell anybody.
We had fun. You enjoyed it.
That's what the photos that you use as blackmail for me show. But anyway, so the question becomes like, so what else is true, right? Because human beings, like civilians, are having these encounters right. for generations. And some of it sounds very fanciful. But the question is, okay, if we are being visited, if time and space no longer matter because we can shorten that, or they can shorten that, and somehow they're here, where are they from? The question is, why are they here? And then, are these other things true? Like, are people getting abducted for some sort of testing? I mean, this is I'm not going to say insane. It is a very bizarre kind of line of questioning. Once one thing is true, what else can be true?
Right.
It's a Pandora's box.
Right. It's a Pandora's box. And, you know, it leads to one of the weirdest things floating around the UFO communities. The idea of there being some that people in the U.S. government have actually not only recovered wreckage, but have communicated with, they do know where they're from. They do know who they are. There's some kind of treaty in place where an exchange is happening already, and that would be another reason that they're keeping it secret, because the U.S. government signed some kind of alien NDA. The U.S. government agreed to not reveal any of this stuff to the rest of the planet in exchange for, this is like one of the abduction theories, isn't it? Is that we gave them permission to take some people and like experiment with them. And I mean, I maintain agnosticism with all this stuff, but this, I mean, it, like you're saying, once you open that Pandora's box and once you get to abductions, it's like, wait, so you knew they were abducting people? So you knew they were abducting Americans and you didn't do anything to warn people that this is something that might happen to you, that you could be abducted? You allowed it to happen? Then people go to jail, right, Jeremy? Like, that's, so there you have people who, yeah. There is another really good reason that they don't want to reveal it is because folks are going to burn. Folks are going to go down if it turns out that they were aware that this was happening and didn't do anything to warn people or stop it.
Yeah, I mean, if that were to be true, that would be horrific, right? Because they can't control it. That, you know, the thing is, though, I don't play in those realms because I don't have, you know, direct evidence of that. I know these exploitation programs right. are real, but I'm happy to talk about it right. in the sense that, look, if that is occurring to U.S. citizens or, you know, globally or whatever, exactly what you said. I mean, that is, so these follow-up questions would become so much, but we don't want to let it off the hook here. We're at a point where the American public is being told that UFOs are real
yeah.
and that we've been studying them. Maybe the next step is they'll say, okay, well, we think we know where some of them are from. Because why? Because we've been told by them. But how do we know for sure? See, that's kind of the fear of some of the people that have talked to me about the comms or the communications, the limited communication that we've had with the operators of these vehicles, which is that how can we trust wow. what they're saying? You know, like, right. how can we trust that?
Right.
It's what we're told, but we have no way to verify that. It's the way you look at evidence. Like, for example,
right.
a lot of people say crazy shit about Bob Lazar. What I really respect about Bob is that he saw an aspect of the technology. He was able to put hands on, and he knows for a fact that that technology exists, that we are reverse engineering that. But he was also shown a bunch of briefings, like an autopsy photo of what appeared to be an alien gray with a singular organ that was cut out. But what I really respect and appreciate about Bob as a scientist is he says, I don't know if the words I read were true. They said that some of the craft came from Zeta Reticuli, a binary star system, because I have no idea. That was literally presented to me in paper, and then I saw a photograph of what appeared to be an alien. He goes, but that doesn't, I didn't touch it. I don't know. It was something that was portrayed to me. So one of the theories is they gave Bob a bunch of information that they wanted to see that he would blab about. It was just kind of outrageous to try to be able to discredit right. him. So when we look at the information that's presented to us, we really need to differentiate between what it is we're told, what it is we read, what it is we have hands-on applied experience with. And I think that that's the issue with the UFO topic. Your mind can go crazy when you go down this rabbit hole of information.
Right. Yeah, and that's what I like about what you do is you bring it back. This is what we do know.
Right.
And I think that's enough for now. I mean, the communications from the vehicles, I would assume there's some kind of communication happening. I would hope that. I would love to know how they communicate any information to another species. Like, have they just learned how to speak our language? Is it some other method of communicating? All that stuff. But yeah, I think it's really important to keep going back to, like, all that stuff is great. It'll be cool. It's good for sci-fi movies. But holy fucking shit, they are admitting that they have wreckage.
Yes.
24 whistleblowers admitting yeah. this, verifying the things that other people have had their careers ruined for saying, verifying these things. That's enough. And what I would love to know your thoughts, Jeremy, on the fact that it seems like the way this is being received by our species is pretty subdued, right? Like, what the, truly, how is it that this is not on the news every night? How is this not constantly in the global conversation that for the first time in the history of the United States or any like nation, leaders are coming forward and admitting, yes, wreckage.
Yeah.
Why aren't more people reacting to this? And
yeah, the disconnect is the messaging. And I'll explain that, but also it's because we don't know what was said in those meetings. Well, I know some of what was said because I talk with some of the people that did those briefings for our government, but the public isn't told. These are done in a classified setting. So all we know is that we have a couple dozen people that have come forward, but the messaging is really interesting. You know, look, there are some aspects of our government which you can't trust what's being said. The head of the UFO program said, you know, we don't have any conclusive evidence that any of this is extraterrestrial. So a lot of the witnesses called me after and they were like, what the fuck? They're like, what is he talking about? We told him program names, what we worked on. They were angry. They do not trust this process for the U.S. government to take their words now and to unravel them and to investigate the programs, the locations of these crash retrievals that they were told, I know for a fact, some hardcore physical locations of where this machinery is. So the messaging is like, we're looking into this. We might build a website that people could like report into, but they're not like definitively stating what it is that they've been told and how they're following up on it. So it's not time yet, I think, for the global public to really embrace it because there's not a lot of information. It's still in these classified realms. I might know a little bit more than the average Joe because this is like my passion, what I do. And it is astounding. The information is astounding when you hear about what we have, the actual full craft and what we've been trying to do to reverse engineer these. But it's just not part of the public dialogue yet because that information hasn't been put forward. But the public is insatiable when it comes to the UFO topic. I mean, man, I get calls to do a news report every couple of days. And I try not to do many of them because there's not a lot more to say. But I think that is changing now. So with or without our government's help of exposing this information, journalists will be, and documentary filmmakers, friends of mine too, that are doing documentaries on this, they will be exposing this information. I just don't think we've hit the tipping point to really make everybody go, holy shit, now I understand.
Is there any validity to the claim that some of these people are making that the moment that they come forward with this stuff, they are immediately threatened? Like it's their lives are threatened. It's not like you signed the fucking NDA. Now you're going to have to pay a bunch of money. It's like, we're going to kill your wife. Like you, is there any validity to that violence is being used to suppress some of this information?
You know, there may have been at one time, I know for sure that type of intimidation was done to Bob Lazar. Again, whether his story is true, whether you believe him, that part is for sure. I've talked to everybody involved. George Knapp even talked with one of the people tasked with following Bob. So in the past, there was a real threat going on. Now it's more of trying to discredit people and ruin their careers. So something which I will be able to talk about later is that there are a number of individuals that were high up in the intelligence world that kind of started bringing this stuff forward internally, and they were absolutely threatened with their careers, with their mental health. I mean, it was more diabolical than saying, I'm going to shoot you in the chest. You know, so I think the careerism idea and how to really get people to stop as of late has been more threatening their careers and mental health. But those people, by the way, they won their battles internally. And that is a story that will come out. These first whistleblowers, that came and gave evidence because they were being basically demoted and being challenged on every level with their career. They won.
Yeah.
And that those stories will come forward. So I don't think we have the same thing now that we did, let's say, in the 50s or the 40s.
Right.
I think now it's more scaring people through. Although there is, from my knowledge, some of these corporations that do hold these programs have used pretty diabolical means to suppress people from talking. You know, a lot of pressure.
Like what? What do you mean? Do you know, like, can you be more specific about that?
I think this story will be told properly later, this specific one that I'm referencing. I don't have the authorization to talk about this, but people have been have been threatened by, let's leave that for another time.
Okay, yeah, sure. I mean, look, it's like millions, billions of dollars, you know, funds psychological programs designed to like come up with the best ways to interrogate people, intimidate people, manipulate people. So I would hate to bear the brunt of that as someone within the government who suddenly did the right thing and came forward. I can't even imagine how terrifying and maddening that would be. I mean, because the thing itself is so bizarre, it would be easy to, even having witnessed one of these things, think, am I going crazy? Maybe I'm going crazy.
Right.
Did I really see that? And they know that. So all they have to do is play on that aspect of it and start making you think, yeah, you've lost your fucking mind. You're being paranoid. What are you talking about? That was a printer. You saw like a printer, a Lockheed Martin basic printer. It wasn't an anti-grav device.
So imagine this, like a lot of the people that I've spoken with that actually have worked on reverse engineering of actual technology, and there are numerous that I've personally talked with that I trust that can validate where they worked, and what they have is a little sliver of the information. So it's very frustrating. So imagine this. Imagine that you are a really well-known auto industry reverse engineer person. It's like for the Ford Motor Company, let's say. And you get a call from an intelligence agency and they're like, hey, we have a problem. We have a propulsion situation and we'd like it to be looked at to see what you can glean or reverse engineer from that. So we're going to pick you up in Texas and we're going to take you out to a facility we have. And you go out to a facility and it looks like a barn, you know, in a field. But you get in and it's like a clean room. You know, it's like an absolute Bond style clean room. And you're like, the fuck?
Wow.
And they show you something.
Yeah.
You know, this is just the day one. They show you a box with a protrusion, like, and then like sort of like a globe on top. And this thing lifts off the table, moves side to side, and comes down. They're like, we don't know how this is doing that. So as a person who does this for a living with mechanics and engineering, you try to look at it for a few days. And there's literally nothing you can make of it. And you tell them, look, this is above my pay grade. I really don't have anything to contribute. Thank you so much for your service. We appreciate it. Here's an NDA, sign it, and don't tell anybody. Thank you, goodbye. And that's the last you hear about it. So a lot of these people are picked up. A lot of these people are picked up out of industry. You know, kind of just like Bob Lazar said that he was picked up, right? You just kind of picked up, thrown into something, although Bob did get to see a lot more. He's a very curious person. And you're only shown this little sliver of stuff. What do you really have to report? You've got a cool story. That's it. So the quality of witness really depends on your access. And most people, because of the compartmentalization, you don't get a lot of access. I'll give you one more story so you understand. There was a scientist at Lawrence Livermore who contacted me many, many years ago, and they just wanted to tell me their story. They're not ready to come public because they still have contracts with these, like Lawrence Livermore National Lab, and they're...
Right.
But this individual in the, I think it was the 60s or 70s, was given a supercapacitor, it must have been the 70s, like a supercapacitor, and they're like, hey, we need you to figure out how this thing works. So reverse engineering. This thing was incredible at what it could do as far as being a supercapacitor and being But here's the issue. The individual said,
sorry, I'm dumb. What? Wait, remind me of what a supercapacitor is.
Yeah, honestly, you should look that up on Google. But like basically.
Okay, let's do it right now. We're going to save everyone.
Otherwise, I'd fuck it up.
We're going to save everyone a Google search supercapacitor. Let's see what we got here. A supercapacitor. Of course, my keyboard stops working. These motherfuckers are everywhere, okay, Jeremy. No problem.
It's a high capacity capacitor with a capacitance value much higher than other capacitors. See, this is why I don't get it. It's voltage and limits.
Forget it. Yeah. Forget it. It's some kind of crazy electrical shit.
Yeah. So basically what was conveyed to me by this, I knew I should not try to describe that and not being a scientist, but basically what he said as like an electro engineer and a scientist is he said, this thing could overperform compared to anything that we had. So I guess that means when you put like voltage in and voltage out, it was able to do a lot better work. And he's like, I know the handful of companies on planet Earth that are able to make these back in the 70s. Like I knew those names. There was no Insignia, no design. It was an absolute mystery. He's like, I was being tasked with reverse engineering it. So who made it? Now, this is really a good example because it was such a finite little look into a reverse engineering project. That's all the person knows. That's all. So it's super frustrating to some of these people that have been pulled out of their industry to work on certain things and not have more information. And this gets us to the core of the problem. The core of the problem is that science doesn't happen in a vacuum. That's what all these scientists tell me. You can't just put a few people to work on a few elements. You need to know how the whole thing fits together. And you need the brightest minds on this. But everybody needs to have security clearances, right? If they're going to be working on this. So you don't necessarily have the best minds on the things that are important. And this is what Lazar said. He goes, I wasn't the best pick for this. It was almost like a Hail Mary, them bringing me in. So that is the... That's the problem with... We need to expand this technology. Yeah.
Open source it. You need to open source it because, you know, the other thing that came to mind is how many people... right now think that they were just looking at some kind of like what you know terrestrial technology. How many people right now will never know that they were seeing a bit of UFO wreckage? Those people aren't going to come forward because it hasn't even crossed their minds that could have been what it was.
We'll never hear from them.
We'll never hear from them. So you're only going to hear from people who saw some of the strangest stuff. And that is really genius. I mean, like, what a brilliant way to try to figure this stuff out. It's just so fascinating to consider how many scientists out there. You know, my friend told me that lots of people work for the CIA and have no idea they work for the CIA.
Yes.
They're just like statisticians or social psychologists who get hired by a company with a weird acronym or, you know, just some name they've never heard of to do some kind of study. And they never will know they were working for the feds.
Yeah.
So it sounds like it's the same sort of thing. I mean, imagine there's people out there who were asked to reverse engineer something and had no idea that it was even related to the US government. Like it was just some company being like, hey, what is this? Do you know what this is? That's crazy. What a mess.
Yeah,
what a mess. And
it is a mess.
Who's behind it? Is there so all of this wild, disparate, like technology scattered all over the United States and barns and basements being looked at by scientists? Who's running the show? Like, who's behind it? Surely there's an organizational principle behind it. Surely there's someone who, like, is fully aware of what's happening.
Yeah, so you would hope this is that there are kind of groups of people that have a better handle on it because we're talking about compartmentalization and how that doesn't work for the scientific approach to really make progress and stuff. But we do understand it, and we've agreed we understand it because there's a national security aspect to this. So on one hand, you can't tell your friends something without telling your enemies. Like you need to have some sense of security. Right. But on the other hand, you've got a real lag in progress. Now, the other, just so I can be clear about it, to the best of my knowledge at this point, the other limiter or the other kind of speed of light, like the brakes, you can't get past it, right? Is that our material science hasn't caught up with some of the materials that we are trying to reverse engineer. To give you an example, have you ever heard about graphene before? Graphene?
Yeah. I mean, I remember there was like a buzz about graphene all of a sudden. People were talking about it being some kind of incredible conductor.
Semiconductor.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's so easy for me to explain because I have a few pieces of it. I did a lot of studies on it with people that have kind of explained it to me. So it's something I've started to understand. So graphene is special because what they've learned. So, a superconductor, to give you an example, it's transfer of heat. So if they found out with graphite, basically like pencil graphite, they put a piece of scotch tape on graphite. And they found out that when they lifted it, there were these perfect hexagonal patterns of these atoms. So what happened is heat can transfer through it at an extraordinary rate. So when you take a piece in your hand, and I have two pieces that we've made, that's the height of our technology. We've layered atoms. Now, when the atoms are perfectly stacked and the layering is, let's say, 3 degrees off of perfect, or 8 degrees off of perfect. Those are the two samples I have. When the atoms are stacked at an 8 degree differential, when they're off at 8 degrees, I can take that graphene, that graphite, and I can stick it in an ice cube. And it's like instantaneously, the coolness, the cold from that ice cube will hit my hand. But when it does that, it goes in like a hot knife through butter. It's the weirdest feeling because when you push it in,
you've done this with your material.
I have it right here, and I'll bring it next time I meet you in LA or Texas.
Wow.
So this is the height of human technology. It's so cool. So you take this thing and you're like, there's an ice cube, a hard ice cube, and you take it and you hit it with this, graphite. And it's this little cube that we built, right? And you push it in, and it's the weirdest feeling because it goes straight into the ice. But the second that coolness, because what it is doing, it's taking the heat from your hand and it's melting the ice super quick. So that's how I understand a semiconductor. Now, what's happening, the ice, the cold goes right back into the thing. It just stops in the middle of the ice cube. Now, when you get an 8 degree differential, when the atoms are off by 8 degrees, it goes less deep. When I take my bad boy with a 3 degree differential, it goes deep into that ice cube because it's transferring the heat more efficiently. So that's an example that really gives you a tactile understanding of human ingenuity at the atomic level. When you can feel that, you notice that materials do different things. Now imagine this.
Right.
Imagine we have a technology that is perfectly atomically layered out of metal. And it's built very specifically to resonate, let's say, waves in a way that we can't build right now because we can't atomically print with atoms. We can't atomically print perfectly yet. So our technology is behind the technology that we have recovered. And so in order for us to duplicate it, our fundamental ecosystem of technology needs to become more advanced. So what they'll do is they'll take it out every 10 years, is what I'm told. They'll bring out this UFO technology. They'll throw some people at it and say, where are we at? What can we do? You know, they'll give them a little slice of it. What can you figure out? And we have been unsuccessful in truly reverse engineering a lot of this tech, although we've gotten derivative technologies. We've learned every time we've tried.
Right. And I'm sure with AI, I mean, I'm sure AI is already like on the case. I'm sure that's definitely going to be used to attempt to reverse engineer this stuff, assuming they have it. I mean, again, it goes back to we're dealing with such a murky, intentionally complex, intentionally confusing subject that easily they could have already reverse engineered it. I mean, this is the... Sometimes when I'm trying to make myself feel better about the fact that we're always on the precipice of World War III, I fantasize, fuck, they did it, didn't they? They reverse engineered one of these things and they're just waiting for an excuse to do a live test of this stuff. They, you know what I mean? Like they want to unveil it in some kind of wartime situation to establish supremacy again, you know, like what we did in World War II.
Right.
Just waiting to like, okay, yeah, but look at this. Look what we have. And do you ever fantasize about that? You ever wonder about that? Like maybe they've already figured this shit out and they're just waiting for the best time to unveil it, to use it.
Yeah, I was actually really bummed to find out that these are not ours. Like I came to the conclusion many years ago, and I was, it really made me sad that these UFOs that we're seeing now, that they are not ours. We have not mastered the ability to replicate or pilot these. A lot of people like to say that, oh, there's such secret stuff. We must be so many decades advanced now.
Right.
For sure, there is some technology that is, like, as an example, heat shielding. We've made huge strides in developing proper heat shielding for re-entry to orbit. But honestly, that's like a rock compared to an iPhone with what I understand these other technologies are. So right. You're talking about two things, right? So one is, how far have we gotten? So for example, could the Tic Tac UFO, the Commander David Fravor saw in 2004, and he chased it for the United States military, could that have been ours? And some people are trying to say it could have been. The answer is, unfortunately, it was not ours. And neither were the UFOs or the UAPs, however you want to call them, in the 2019 events that were transmedium, that could move in the ways that they did. So we might get derivative technologies, but we are still so stunted, from what I understand, of what we can do and achieve because of the material science. The other thing that you're talking about, I remember Christopher Nolan's new movie is coming out about Oppenheimer and the atomic program. And there was this great line in the trailer, and it was something to the effect of, you know, people are not going to understand what we've created until they use it. And that idea that when we use the atomic bombs, people were like, oh shit, wait up. This is literally global problem if we continue down this path.
Yes.
That's when treaties were signed and that kind of thing. I don't think we're waiting for some war to use the technology that we have. I think we deploy everything we have whenever we can. There's no weapon the U.S. hasn't made that we haven't used, as far as I'm aware at this point. Unfortunately or fortunately, right. It's just how it is. So I'm not so worried about the...
But I mean, you can't use... I mean, like, if this is like a destructive technology, I mean, the effect that dropping the atom bomb on Japan had on the, wasn't just like the end of World War II. It was the beginning of U.S. dominance over the whole planet, because, you know, who's going to say anything to someone who has that kind of technology? But you can't, I'm just saying, if they had some kind of anti-grav weapon or something, you can't just... You need an excuse to use it, right? Like, and prior to dropping the atom bomb, people didn't know. There was a theory it could exist or something like that, but people didn't know. That's, again, I agree with you, though. You're probably right. I mean, if they have it, they would have used it by now.
Well, and everything is scalable. Maybe not. We just haven't seen evidence of us achieving any kind of anti-grav stuff. Like, a lot of people like to believe that. Like, you know, we're like Star Wars here. We've achieved so much great stuff. From everybody that I've ever, and take my opinion for what, however you value it, but the people that I speak with who actually work on this,
I value it.
The people that I speak with that actually work on this, that we have not achieved any form of true anti-grav. We have not been able to duplicate it in any way. So you'd have to wonder if these technologies, if we have had made advancements in maybe weaponry, but also what's the positive aspect? Because remember, we have nuclear energy, right? So that's another, they called it clean energy in the 80s. So there were positive things, I guess you could call them positive. There were positive things that apparently, you know, came from the nuclear era. So we have nuclear subs, all sorts of stuff. They call it clean energy. It's not really clean energy, but that idea that there could be positive things. People think the world would change overnight as soon as we crack this, or as soon as we achieve, you know, this sort of disclosure about the UFO thing. And unfortunately, that's just not true. I've come to understand it's just not true. The whole ecosystem of power on planet Earth, if we were able to generate this enormous power with these little devices, it wouldn't instantaneously change the world we live in. We don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the motivation. And if you think about like the profits right. that go on with energy, there needs to be an infrastructure to support a revolutionary change in the economy. So even when we get to the point
right.
where we've been able to derive enough of the technology to replicate some of the power, if we ever could, it wouldn't change the world overnight. We would have to rebuild the society on a different form of infrastructure.
Right. Right. So that's cool. Right. That makes sense. You know, and also, I mean, and I mean this in the best way possible, because usually the most, it's what you just said is boring. And usually the most boring explanation is true. Like that's makes way more sense that, yeah, it would, it's like, it would be slow. It would be frustrating. It might not ever work. I mean, it sounds like, you know, we're, you ever, I, one of my favorite genre of YouTube video is the monkey that has snatched the iPhone. And for as long as the, when someone's filming. And so as long as that thing's filming, you see a monkey's POV of the world as it's galloping around with a phone. It sounds like that's what our situation is. Like essentially an iPhone has dropped into a bunch of monkeys. It's cool, it glows. Glowing's cool. It's cool. It's like hard. Can you use it to crack? This could be really good for opening nuts. You know, like what? Because you know, obviously you and I are not physicists or
clearly technicians. I'm not. Yes, definitely.
Clearly. But I think there's another form of reverse engineering you can do when it comes to these things. Like, in other words, what do we know? Well, they're here. Something is here.
Something is here.
And what, based on what you just said, whatever this thing is has like the ability to manipulate matter at the fundamental like level, at the atomic level, maybe the subatomic level. And the implication there is that there's an intelligence. This isn't like some, you know, space rock or something like that. And where there's intelligence, there's culture. There's, you know, and what they're not doing tells us a lot about them, right? Like the fact that they are hiding mostly, but that they do, they must know enough about us to know that we can see them now, right? They must know when they're appearing around aircraft carriers.
Yeah, I don't think we would see any of these if it wasn't an intentional display. And that's what's so kind of haunting about this. Like, you and I have talked before when we were just shooting the shit about the idea of like directed technification, right? The idea that this is a program of some sorts to help humanity uplift right. their technology and slowly build it towards some kind of goal that we're not aware of. There is evidence to suggest that the UFO puzzle itself is some sort of learning program. You know, these things are just out of reach of our technology. In the 1800s, you had a lot of UFO sightings that were of dirigibles, you know, kind of things that looked like modern day blimps with lights on them and people coming out of them and saying absurd things like, can I get directions to Kentucky? I mean, it's like you have this pattern, right? And the pattern of eyewitnesses, if you really listen to them, the pattern of eyewitnesses is that it's always just beyond. This technology is something we can understand, but it's beyond our reach. And they're talking about our future. So you have to wonder, is this whole thing we're experiencing that we're calling UFOs, is it part of a bigger kind of maybe machine learning program that's trying to take human existence and say, let's try to evolve you technologically, the technification of our planet? I have no idea. It's you and me spitballing in a hotel room where I won't remember tomorrow. Like
Jeremy,
I have no idea.
Crazy.
Yeah. It's
wild idea. We're spitballing now, folks. This is no longer like based on documents. It's spitballing. But yeah, it's like, or, you know, again, it's like if you look at every single thing that they do that has been seen and reported as a communication.
Yeah,
is a direct communication with a planet. instead of an accidental sighting, or like whatever their ability to evade radar or to cloak themselves failed or something like that. But rather, no, obviously something that can like master creating crafts at the subatomic level or the atomic level, they don't fuck up like that. It's not like somebody fell asleep at the UAP wheel or something. Like, shit, turn your cloaking on, the monkey sauce. So it's a communication. And what you're saying is it's almost like a teaching or something. They're like, look, you can do this. This is possible. Or is it an IQ test? Does anyone talk about that? Like, is this some kind of like a way to determine how intelligent we are? Like, show them this and see if they can replicate that. It show them crash this here and see what they do with that. Is it a test? Is it like some form of studying us by showing themselves to us?
Well, that's why I'm kind of allergic to the term like crash retrievals, because you have people saying, well, if these things are really traversing time and space, or maybe even dimensions, whatever that means, right? Like, would this thing really crash? So part of the idea is that these are Easter eggs, that these technologies are kind of being delivered to us or given to us in a form we can understand. You know, there are reports that some of these are from archaeological digs, which would be really fucking fascinating if that were to be true.
Wow.
Right? It's like an ancient, because remember the whole idea, like how were all of these stones perfectly carved back in the day? Maybe there was a different technology, because doing that now would be just astounding, the carving with the tools they had then. So the question is, have we evolved and collapsed? Has that happened a bunch of times? I don't know. I'm not an archaeologist or anything like that. But what I do see is what people are being told and what is being reported. And I'll give you an example. Do you remember hearing about, like, let's talk about beings, right? Did you remember hearing about in 1994, in Rua, Zimbabwe, where the aerial school, where all those kids, about 62 kids were kind of, okay. So in that case, what was interesting, I know two of the females.
No, keep describing it. They might, people listening might not know. Go ahead, like give a synopsis of that story. Folks may never have heard it before. It's wild.
It's an astounding case. So in Rua, Zimbabwe, in 1994, and around that area, there were a bunch of UFO sightings that were occurring, and there was a school called the Aerial School, and there were 62 kids, and they all saw, when they were out, these craft, the UFOs, like flying saucers, that landed in their schoolyard. And what happened was all the kids kind of ran over to it to look at it. And it's a famous case because the BBC was there like just a day after or 2 days after. Harvard professor, head of psychology at Harvard, John Mack, was on the ground taking statements. And across the board, what the kids said was that, these, and by the way, there was trace evidence of these landings of these UFOs. And what happened-
I didn't know that.
Yeah, people don't know about that. So what happened was these kids saw these beings come out of the craft. And the ones that were closest to it are two of my friends, Liesl and Salma. And they were children at the time. You can look up the BBC report and hear them talk about it. They all drew these beings, right? Big almond-shaped eyes. I mean, kind of like the typical aliens that we've been told what aliens look like, alien grays. But what was really astounding was how they described the communication. They said it was telepathic, and they said they were mesmerized. They kept saying that to me. They were mesmerized. It was as if they were in a vacuum. They were looking at this thing in the eyes and they couldn't shake it. And these beings were projecting to them these ideas and these visuals of our planet being deforested, being harmed by nuclear weapons. It was like this devastating thing. They're saying, you gotta take care of your planet. And this is a message that's been repeated over and over and over to witnesses. Now, we don't know what the intention of these beings are, if this is all true, but that's something that is consistent. So I asked one of them, I asked Liesl, and she was like, I mean, 3-4 feet away from one of these beings, if you understand what they experienced. And I said, what do you as a child, like, what do you do with that information? How does it help for them to tell you that if this indeed happened? And she says, well, I think I'm doing it. I think I'm doing it now. And I go, what do you mean? And she says, I think we were shown that back then in 1994 so that later in life I could share this story and tell people what it is that we were told.
Wow.
Yeah. So right. It's like, who knows?
Wow.
Is this some sort of mechanism of education?
Right. Like, yeah, this is, and it's a good sign when the teachers start showing up, or a really bad sign. I'm not sure which. It's like, are we fucking up so much
right.
that they're like having to like
intervene
increasingly like, yeah. And or, yeah, it's whatever it is such a delight that you get to be one of the people who is translating this information for the rest of us. You do such a good job at it, Jeremy. You're so good at like maintaining this really sane composure when you talk about it. You really, as far as I'm concerned, it's a great service because, you know, not just for people like stoners like me, who just love to think about the vast universe that we're in and the mysteries of life, but all those people who had the guts to speak up about their experiences, knowing it wasn't going to go well for them, you're validating them. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. So thanks for that, man.
Thank you, man. We're all kind of like, I am so interested in this topic. I don't have more answers than other people with it. I just have a lot more questions that I think are refined now because I've been going after it. It's just so interesting to me. And I would like to know, I'd like to learn more. And I'd like to know that in 5 years from now, 10 years from now, that we will all know more about this mystery that we call UFOs. It might be much more vast than just these machines that are in our skies, but we have to have an entrance point to it, to the public and global dialogue. And I think we're seeing that now. We're seeing that entrance to actually having this conversation through the military and the concerns about national security and near misses. And so, look, man, it's going to be an exciting ride. I would expect that we're going to learn a lot more just within this next year. I certainly will be releasing more cases and information like really soon from a military base where we have footage. George and I have footage from like tons of different cameras of something that looks like the Phoenix Lights. It's really wild, man.
Wow.
So hopefully we learn more, my brother, because we're all here on the same globe spinning around, bro.
Yes, sir, Mr. Corbell. And congrats on Weaponized. What a fantastic podcast. That was so fun. That night hanging out with you and George was just magical. Thank you for letting me be on the show. And folks, if you haven't watched this podcast, you have to. It is so good. You all are really a wonderful team.
Thanks, man. We're having so much fun.
Thank you, Jeremy. Everybody, check out Jeremy Corbell, George App, Weaponized. All the links will be at DougAtrussell.com. Thank you for your time, Jeremy. I really appreciate it.
Always great to talk with you, my brother.
That was Jeremy Corbell, everybody. Check out his podcast, Weaponized. It is amazing. A tremendous thank you to our sponsors, Athletic Greens and Lumi Labs. I will see you next week. Until then, Hare Krishna.